passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Welcome back. As we continue here, we're just 2 hours away from tip. First game of the SEC basketball tournament. We'll be joined by Todd Golden in a few minutes, talking about his remarkable second season with the Florida Gators. A few minutes for calls here before we get back to the coaches, and Susie is up next in Georgia. Hey, Susie.
Hi, Paul. Watching you on TV.
Great.
Wish I was off this weekend because my daughter lives in Nashville. And
oh, wow.
I'm going to come down there to say hello, and I brought my little grandson Jack Attack with me.
Oh, my goodness.
But one quick thing I want to thank. God, from Tuscaloosa, Jim, for the kind comments that he has made about me. I really appreciate that, Jim, and I appreciate you seeing my character as I hope it to be. But one thing, Paul, do you know when the word scumbag originated?
I do. I don't have any understanding of the genesis of the word scumbag. I have used it many times in my career. I probably should know it.
Right. Yeah, and it's not a pleasant term, and to be called one is not pleasant. But it became popular in the 60s.
Oh. Now, I've used the phrase scumbag, sleazebag, dirtbag.
Yeah.
How would you rank them on the Susie's rules of order?
I think scumbag is the worst, personally.
Scum's pretty bad.
Scum.
And
yeah,
sleaze
really
is... Yeah, I think you're right.
Sleazebag, yeah. But scum is just think about
it. Yeah, I mean, you think of scum, you think of the bottom of the ocean, the pond scum.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with you on
bottom,
that.
Bottom feeders. But
yeah.
I stopped him when I got in the car. I put on your show, and I was so impressed with, is his name Buzz Williams?
Buzz Williams, yeah. Exactly.
What an interview. I would want my child around that man and his family. I mean, it was probably one of the most impressive interviews I've ever heard from a coach.
He's somebody I've got. I met him for the first time when he was at Virginia Tech. The ACC was having media days where I work, and he came up to me, and we've been buddies ever since. Every time we're in College Station or something like this, he's high on our list.
Well, that's the beauty and power of your show, to bring that to us, because I mean, that's how I learned about Mike Leach, God rest his soul, and I wish he hadn't passed away, but to hear those fine coaches talk like they do, it's what it's all about. And but I have an idea for Dominic.
Okay, sure.
You know, your callers that put your picture on, like, Todd, me, Handsome Joe, and that, you can see what they look like, Johnny B. And then there's the callers that don't show us, their picture, and that's fine, but I think you should have Dominic study their calls or whatever, and because he's arty, and do a character sketch of each person. I think that would be cool to see what a character sketch would look like.
It's a good idea. He's really good, and I'm sure you saw his drawing of me the other day, and it was really cool. So that's a very good idea.
I just think it would be, and not disparaging pictures or whatever, just a caricature to put with their name. I don't know. I just kind of came into my mind today. But thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you very much, Susie. Appreciate it. You be well. You take care of yourself. We are back here, and just seems like yesterday we got to know you here a year ago, and what a season. Coach Todd Golden joining us from the University of Florida. We knew you were going to be good. That's all we heard. But
I appreciate you saying that.
You didn't waste any time.
It took a year, but we got here, and thank you. We've had a great year. We got a really good group right now, and I feel like it took us a little bit to get everybody on the same page. But once the new year rolled around, This team's been pretty dang good the whole way, and fortunately we played ourselves into the tournament. And now hopefully if we have a really good weekend, we can play ourselves into a really nice seed as well.
I mean, obviously it's different. You coming here a year later, last year, you were trying to figure out where you were going.
For sure.
I realize there's so many new entities in college basketball, the portal and among them, but yeah. How do you think you were able to turn this thing so well?
Well, after, you know, when we got down here 2 years ago in March, talk about trying to figure everything out, you know, coming from San Francisco, coming to a new place. It took us a lot of time to kind of calibrate and get organized and comfortable. And that our first team, we had really good guys. You know, they played hard, but we just weren't quite good enough to really compete at the highest level in this league. But that first year was a great kind of learning experience, and it really allowed my staff and I to get on the same page and understanding what we needed to bring in to be able to really compete. And we went out and got 6 or 7 transfers. You know, fortunately, we hit on 2 freshmen that are playing really, really well right now. And, you know, this team has been really good because they're unselfish. They like playing together. And they've done a really good job continuing to improve as the year's gone on.
Yeah, I remember when you got the job, I saw an interview, or maybe we were talking to him, I don't remember, with Bruce Pearl. And, yeah. And you were talking about his time. He was talking about your time with him, and nobody wants to, you know, because you've had a lot of different people, but he certainly played a role in elevating your career.
Yeah, absolutely. He's, you know, I would consider him one of my mentors, you know, along with Kyle Smith and Randy Bennett, the guys I played for at St. Mary's, and obviously very fortunate to have played for those guys as well. But, you know, Bruce is super, super important to me, and, you know, he gave me a chance back when he first got to Auburn to be on his staff, and that was my first high major position, and I learned so much from him in those 2 years that we spent together at Auburn. And the reality is, if I hadn't been there with him, you know, I probably wouldn't have gotten this opportunity. You know, just being in the league, familiar with a couple people that worked in the administration at Florida because of that time, and it definitely helped prepare me for this opportunity that I have right now.
I mean, I know the youth jokes are getting old, but I still have a hard time imagining you not being carded at a bar. I mean, I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. Hey, it's like you said, it's a good problem to have. You know, I'll ride it out as long as I can. And shoot, man, it's a good thing, I guess, and I'm not upset about it.
When we have great coaches in their 60s and 70s, but being closer in age to your players than anyone else, does that give you a little bit of a connection that maybe others don't?
You know, I think as times continue to change, you know, within our profession, within college athletics, and, you know, I think it's more important now than ever to have a really true, solid relationship with your guys. And, you know, things can change so quickly, and they have to have that trust and that belief. And, you know, I feel like it allows me to be a little more mobile, especially in the recruiting process. It allows me to build relationships a little quicker. But then once we get here, you know, it's a big, not only for myself, but for our staff. You know, we're really trying to get these guys to understand how much we care about them, and also spending as much time with them as we can, you know, throughout the course of the week. And, you know, I assume I'll continue to evolve and change, you know, as I continue to get older. But it's definitely something that I enjoy, just being around these guys, whether it's on or off the floor.
We're talking to Coach Golden from the University of Florida. Every coach sells various things, their own record, their own past. But Florida, and I think too many people maybe don't appreciate it. I know you do because you work in that building, but the richness of that tradition is unbelievable.
Incredible. It was what, you know, we had a great run at San Francisco and we had some opportunities, but when Florida came calling, it was a no-brainer for me, you know. And a big part of it was when I was playing back at St. Mary's in the mid-2000s, Florida was winning back-to-back national championships. So when we got knocked out of the tournament, where, you know, I'm watching, and it's Torian Green, who's on my staff now, Joakim, Al, Corey Brewer, all those guys, Lee Humphrey, who does our radio, just winning back-to-back national championships. And so that always resonated with me. I feel like the brand is super strong. You know, the Gator logo is recognizable across the country, orange and blue. You have fans everywhere. I would say that's one of our biggest selling points. It was the first thing that we talk about with recruits when we get them on campus is, hey, we were drawn here because of this rich tradition and history, and the goal is for everybody that comes into our program to want to build and be a part of that.
Coach, I know everybody comes here with different purposes. I mean, we talked to a few folks that need to win.
Yeah.
That's pretty obvious. You want to win, and it's the goal. It's a long week. But knowing you're in the tournament, does that change your approach to Nashville?
You know what? I think for us, especially because we lost to Vanderbilt on Saturday in a tough game, you know, we want to make sure we go into the NCAA tournament with some momentum. And, you know, obviously whoever we play tomorrow night is going to be a big challenge. Georgia, Missouri tonight, we'll get the winner tomorrow. But I would like us to get some good positive momentum going into that and getting back to the physicality that we've played with the majority of, you know, through the majority of conference play that allowed us to get out to an 11-6 record before losing on Saturday. So, yeah, I think we have an opportunity to kind of gain and gather some momentum as we go into the tournament, which should help us kind of get back on track.
How much of next week do you have in the back of your mind? You know, you're simulating a tournament here. That's
right.
That's a great part of this.
Yeah.
But next week is different.
It's different. But again, for this group and for a lot of the guys in our program, this is the first time, you know, playing in an environment like this.
Okay.
in a tournament setting. You know, we really returned two guys that were on this team last year that played in this building and played real minutes in the game. So it's going to be a new experience for us. And again, I want us to get comfortable. I want us to play well. But the reality, and to what you're speaking to, obviously next week is an even bigger tournament, and hopefully we can stay around in that one as long as possible as well.
So I'll make you a promise next year when we talk to you, whenever it is, whether in Gainesville here, I won't do any more age jokes. By then you'll at least be 30, won't you?
I am 30. I'll be 39 at this point next year, for sure.
Man, that 40th birthday is going to be painful, isn't it?
It's about a year and a half away, you know, a year and a half away.
Just wait till you hit the ones after that and that one after that. Coach, always great to see you. Thanks so much.
Paul, appreciate you, man. Thank you.
You bet. Coach Todd Golden from the University of Florida. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back in Nashville, we've had so many great coaches on, mascots. But now we get to my favorite part of the program. We talk to venerable sports writers. And there's nobody more venerable, I don't think, than Wally Hall, who hails from Arkansas. Just truly a legendary figure in that state's media. Wally, it's great to see you. It's always great to know that some of the guys who my group looked up to, amazingly, are still around.
Well, it's proof that you're not the oldest guy covering this tournament.
I feel we had Kirk Bowles on a couple of months ago, and you guys have been around. How long have you been doing this?
I've been a columnist since '79.
Oh my goodness!
And about 50 years total in the business. I got out a couple of times. Not voluntarily.
Well, but I mean that's part of the world. But it's really amazing to think about. And I've watched you from up close occasionally, and mostly from a distance. But you've been that rare columnist that not only has been able to ingratiate yourself with the people that matter, but you've never been shy about offering your opinion about those folks.
No, I try to be honest. You know, that's what journalists do. You always do that. You're honest. You're sometimes controversial. Sometimes I am. It's part of the job.
I mean, it would be almost absurd to ask you about how things have changed. That might be a good question from 2 years ago, let alone when you started in the 70s. Can you believe what we're currently going through?
Well, Paul, we walk around with a computer in our shirt pocket.
Yeah.
And there were no computers when I got into business.
No.
I mean, you had this machine and you stuck a piece of paper in it, and it took 6 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? It weighed 40 pounds. You couldn't check it. You had to carry it on the airplane.
Yeah. Those were always, it was one thing to be on deadline. It was another thing to see if your story ever got in.
Right.
I can't remember which machine it was I used in my first job. Maybe it was a Texas Instrument. And it worked about half the time. Most of the time I would be dictating.
Those were great little machines, though.
Once they started to work.
Getting a coupler on it so that the phone could pick up those noises was the hard
part. But in college, I was still typing in either, it wasn't a fax. It was a...
Telegram?
Yeah. I don't even, I know some of you think these are a couple of dinosaurs. Well, you're right about that. But the thing I've always been impressed by I think you may have been one of the first. There were others who started branching out, but you started dabbling in radio and television. How did you know that was going to be the thing?
It was all about money. You know, journalists don't make a lot of money.
No.
You know, I always said I can rub elbows with millionaires because I have a typewriter. But it's not a great pain. It's rewarding in a lot of other ways. But I had a family and I need to make more money. So I started off with radio, 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, and then branched into TV. I got an offer and that was 30 minutes one time a week. And just recently I made the decision to retire completely from radio and completely from TV. Just at my age.
I'm paying very close attention to this.
You know, do I think about retiring from newspaper? Sure I do. But I'm not going to. I got a lot to say yet.
And, I mean, listen, the world doesn't need anyone lamenting how much that industry has changed. But when you think back, though, when you would write an article back in the day, I mean, the leaders, whether it was Frank Broyles as the AD and prior to that the football coach or Nolan Richardson or anyone since then, I mean, they were hanging on on every word because it really did influence the public.
Well, the fans want to know all about the team. And we have two full-time guys in Fayetteville, and that's all they do is Razorback coverage. And so, you know, the games, we just cover the heck out of them. I mean, we still, a normal game story, I'll have a column, Bob will have a big game story, and Tom Murphy will have notes on every game. Not just the big ones, but every game. I got an email yesterday from my boss, Allison, and she said, in Sunday's paper, we had 18 byline stories.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, the state championships were going to high school basketball. And so I bet there's not another newspaper in the country that had 18 staff bylines.
No, I mean, where I live, I get yesterday's news next week. I mean, it's truly remarkable.
Are you still in Birmingham?
No, I live in North Carolina.
Oh, okay. You live in the headquarters type? Oh, that's good. You don't have to commute.
No. Well, that was a big issue.
Yeah, I bet.
But it simply couldn't be done.
Travel's hard.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like the old days. Before 9/11, you show up 20 minutes, get on the plane. And,
exactly.
And now you got to be there 2 hours early, and it's just dead time.
So I want to talk about basketball because it's been a, I mean, there's no other way to characterize this. It's been a fairly disappointing season for the Razorbacks, who love basketball.
Yeah, I think they started out the season ranked number 12, and I think they're 121 now. And
wasn't this supposed to be the year?
This was supposed to be a good year. They didn't blend very well. You know, last year they got lucky when he had 10 new players. They had a tour in August and went to Italy.
Right.
And so they were together for 14 days. They didn't have that luxury this year. And he didn't settle on his 8-man rotation until 3 games ago. Mm. And in the last 3 games, those 8 guys have played all but 17 seconds. So they've gotten a little better.
And I actually turned it off Saturday because Arkansas was way up.
Yep.
And I was surprised to see the result in Tuscaloosa.
It's too late, but they're improving.
Yeah.
A big difference came when they battles, as you'll see at 6 o'clock. He's a scorer. He's not a defender. And it took a while to realize he might get you 36, but he gives up 12, but the differential, it's worth it. So he's brought a lot to the game.
You knew I would not have you up here, and we're talking to Wally Hall, who has covered college football 50 years? Is that, or is it more?
About
50. That's pretty remarkable. So I'm courtesy of you, I've had the opportunity to come in occasionally to be in Little Rock and other places and speak and get to know a lot of people there. And I'll never forget being there, I don't know, maybe a couple of months after Bobby Petrino was let go. And I mean, it was John L. Smith was the coach. I remember seeing you there. And I didn't just wake up and see this because we talked about it. But I had Pittman on the other day, and he was talking. And I wasn't even sure I was believing what I was hearing as he talked about the love that Bob Petrino has for Arkansas being one of the primary reasons why he wanted him to come back and be his offensive coordinator.
Well, you were speaking of the Little Rock Touchdown Club. A couple of years ago, Bobby paid his own way to come speak to the Touchdown Club. He wouldn't take a fee. He did no transportation. And he apologized to the fans.
Okay.
And he told them, he said, I realized it too late how much Arkansas meant to me. And he said, biggest regret of my life.
Wow. So that was a turning point.
Yes, yes. And then people have really embraced him. But,
okay.
I mean, people were jumping off the bandwagon by the boatload after last football season.
Right.
And this gave people some hope because he is an offensive genius.
Yeah, and by the way, I've said this many times, but you played a big role in that group, and our friend Basil also does. That is without a doubt, and I've had the opportunity over the years to speak to all of them. That's without a doubt the best football club I've ever been to.
Everybody that comes there says that, and we average maybe 400 people on a Monday. And Peyton Manning came last year, and we had to move it to the convention center.
Wow.
Sold out at 1,200 people.
No, you always feel really important when you get there until you ask the host, like, who was here 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Now, I had the advantage, I think it was last year, I followed Ogeron, so that was easier than Peyton Manning.
We could understand what you said.
But, so... On the Bob Petrino situation, what do you think he's going to make a big enough impact?
I think the expectations are too high. I mean, they've got several guys that have transferred in because KJ Jefferson transferred out.
Right.
But you got to have players. I mean, Nick Saban probably retired because the NIL and the transfer portal. It's just, where does Arkansas get players? They got to get them from Texas.
Right.
And with Texas coming into the league, that's going to give them a little more exposure there. So maybe that'll help. But I think they got to be patient with Bobby. He's got to get some players.
We hope. Everybody loves Coach Pittman.
It's not fun covering a losing team.
No. I had a few years of that at Alabama, like about 20. before Saban got there. Wally Hall, one of my all-time favorites, 50 years in the business, and still kicking.
Still going.
You're no chance you're going to walk away anytime soon.
No, I've got a... For the whole time I've been a columnist, I have been in favor of Arkansas State and Arkansas playing football, and they're going to play.
You're still pushing it.
And I'm going to be there.
Okay, when is that?
2025.
Okay. Keep going, Wally. You give us young guys inspiration.
Thanks, Paul.
So good to see you. One of
you
the all-time buddy. Best, Wally Hall, who has been a legendary Hall of Fame columnist in Arkansas. We'll take a short break. We'll talk to the associate commissioner of the SEC right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back. It's great to have you with us in Nashville, as everybody excited about the tip coming up in about 90 minutes to the SEC basketball tournament. And one of the themes that you hear over and over is how great this league is. And we're going to give you all the credit for that. We're talking about Garth Glissman, who is the SEC Associate Commissioner, and certainly one of your big concentrations is basketball. First of all, welcome to our program, Garth. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Well, thanks for having me, Paul. I'm a longtime listener. And I'll know that SEC basketball has made it when more of your famous callers are calling in to talk some hoops.
Yeah, I mean, some of the famous callers you probably don't want paying much attention because they tend to get angry, a little angrier than you need, but I really appreciate that. I want to talk about you for a second before we talk about the work you've done. You were an attorney in Nebraska, hardly the place that you normally see an ascent from Nebraska to the NBA, where you spent 7 years in New York, to the SEC. Can you make that simpler than what I've just laid out?
Well, to make a long story short, I was a corporate attorney in my home state of Nebraska, but prior to that, when I was in law school, I started coaching high school basketball. I was a head high school coach at a small private high school, such a small school that I remember when coaches at the bigger schools would big time me. But I kept coaching and I continued coaching even when I was at a law firm. And so I ended up staying at that law firm. And after having coached for 8 years and I was a partner in the law firm by that time, I got a message on LinkedIn from the NBA. And I thought it was a hoax because surely the NBA wasn't, you know, in the business of hiring Nebraska lawyers for any positions at the league office. But it turns out it wasn't a hoax. That led to a 6-month interview process, and ultimately I was hired by the NBA and started there in 2016. Was at the NBA league office, obviously working underneath Commissioner Adam Silver for 7.5 years. Had an opportunity to come work for the Commissioner Greg Sankey in the SEC starting here in August of 2023. And I mean this in all sincerity, Paul. I'm a longtime fan of yours. And I think there are two people who have done a wonderful job of being ambassadors for the SEC. And for me, it was Commissioner Sankey. I'm now proud to call him a boss. And you've done tremendous in terms of your outreach for the league. And I can say that as someone who grew up and was a sports fan outside the footprint. And you've done so much to grow the SEC brand. And I followed you in Nebraska. I followed you when I was in New York City. And I'm honored to be a part of the SEC.
Well, thank you. That is really very kind of you to say. And I'm moved by that. But let me, I don't want to talk about me though. I want to talk about you because you took over from Dan Leibovitz. Some of the things were in play, but I know that there has been so much change in terms of basketball. I remember talking to Commissioner Sankey when three schools got in, and it was a bizarre look for a league this proud. Talk about what you have seen, what you have experienced, and now what you are implementing as that person.
When Commissioner Sankey took over as commissioner, we placed three teams in the NCAA tournament that year. Fast forward to last year, we placed eight teams in the NCAA tournament. That actually tied the Big Ten for the most teams in the tournament. This year, we're trending to place 7 or 8 teams in the tournament this year. That would also place among the top two conferences. So we're trending up. There was a great article actually in The Athletic today talking about the recent rise in SEC basketball. Obviously, my predecessor, Dan Leibovitz, who's a good friend, deserves a lot of credit. Mike Trangisi, who was the commissioner of the Big East, then a consultant and an advisor to Commissioner Sankey, also played a critical role. But I think Alabama coach Nate Oates summed it up when he said, and this is in the opening paragraph of the article, that one day Commissioner Sankey just decided it was time for the SEC to be good in basketball. And here we are. I'm standing on the shoulders of all that work and coming to the league at a time that, certainly basketball is flourishing. But as I surveyed the league doing my due diligence, coming over from the NBA, I still think this is a growth story. When you think about all of the growth in the southeastern part of the United States, Paul, the economic growth, the population growth, the SEC is very much a growth story. We add Oklahoma and Texas next year. You think about the city of Nashville. So I'm excited about where the SEC is now, the conference as I've inherited it, but even more excited about what the future holds.
There are so many elements, and I know, because I've seen it over these many, many years, how the stigma of the league has changed. It used to be Kentucky. And now there are so many other great stories. I mean, last year we saw, Alabama number one in the country. Tennessee was number one a couple of years ago. There's been so much talk about the seeding. These are things that you deal with every day. But when you communicate with the head basketball coaches, which, by the way, I would think you would need a lot of Advil or a leave or something because they are an eccentric group collectively. What do you hear from them?
When I was thinking about taking this job, I surveyed the list of the 14 basketball coaches, four of whom have been National Coach of the Year. And then in addition to those four, we have three others who have taken their school to at least the Elite Eight.
Right.
So half of current head coaches have gone to the Elite Eight or further. We have two active coaches with 800 career wins or more in Rick Barnes or John Calipari. But having been at the league office at the NBA, you kind of know how personalities work and you understand the nature of league office work. I looked at those coaches and I said, those guys are going to make me better because they're strong personalities. It takes a strong personality to come in to a program like Auburn, like Bruce Pearl has. and turned around that program in the way that he has. John Calipari, his resume, his personality speaks for itself. So I knew those coaches would make me better. I knew they would push me. And so I viewed it as a challenge for sure, but it was a challenge that I wanted to run to. And those guys have made me better. I'm proud to work with them. They're a dynamic group. We have great coaches. We also have great players. When you look at the NBA, no conference in the country has more players in the NBA than the SEC.
Remarkable.
And that trend, based on performance in recent NBA drafts, is only going to continue. This year, current projections from ESPN were projected to have the first two college players taken in this year's draft, both freshmen from Kentucky, and Rob Dillingham and Reed Shepard. And of course, Dalton Connect has been one of the biggest stories in college athletics. And one of the reasons I think those three players are great to highlight is, for all the talk of one and done and the fact that basketball players, unlike football players, they are identified much earlier in their maturation process. But these are three guys, when if you look at a mock draft from before the season, they were not atop of the mock draft boards. They have come to the SEC. They have made the most of their opportunity. They have, to use the Nick Saban term, they've created value for themselves based on their time in the SEC. Dalton Connect, SEC Player of the Year, averages more points in SEC play this year than any player in over a decade.
Wow.
Just 2 years ago, Paul, he was at Northern Colorado, averaged less than 10 points a game at Northern Colorado. Coming out of high school in the suburbs of Colorado, suburbs of Denver, Colorado, he didn't have a single Division I offer. Goes to play junior college, spends 2 years at a junior college, Northern Colorado, modest junior year, explodes as a senior, and now he has a historic fifth year as SEC Player of the Year. And that's the beauty of college athletics. And so much has changed, Paul. Transfer portal, NIL, I know that makes some fans uncomfortable, but you still have young men that have an opportunity to create tremendous value. And then, of course, you know, even for the players who aren't necessarily the star athletes, they're learning valuable life lessons that they carry on with them for the rest of their lives.
Just a couple of seconds left, but I do want to ask you about an issue that has come up. We saw it recently with Duke. We see other incidents, and that's the safety issue. I know it's top of mind. You don't want these things to happen. You do want fans to enjoy the game and celebrate when they win. Is there a
Well, two things. Number one, the SEC has taken the lead on court storming. So in the SEC, the penalty, first offense, $100,000 fine. Second offense, $250,000 fine. Third offense, $500,000 fine. And here's the important part, Paul. That money doesn't come to the conference office. That money goes to the visiting school.
Wow.
So if you're the visiting school in the SEC and they storm the court on you, you're getting a check. The difficult part is, Paul, you know that what makes college sports unique, and I have a unique perspective on this, having just spent 7.5 years in the NBA, the secret sauce of college sports, the unique value proposition of college sports, is that connectivity between the school and community and the school and its student body. So you don't want to take that away, but obviously it's important that we prioritize the safety of our student athletes and coaches, and the SEC is taking the lead on that issue.
We have had a blast. I want this to continue, and we're going to continue. But I've been told by somebody, what's going on here? Are you celebrating a birthday sometime soon? We have a birthday cake for you. Happy birthday, Garth. I know this is a you couldn't be very old because you still look like a. But
well, Paul, this means a lot to me for a couple reasons. One, longtime listener, first time appearance. secondly. My wife, Katie, is home with our two little kids, and like the whole family except for me is sick. And so I'm spending this week in Nashville by myself without my family, which is kind of a bummer to spend that amount of time away from family. But then, you know, knowing that my wife and kids are not here to celebrate my birthday. So to be able to celebrate my birthday with you instead is pretty special.
Well, it has been, I have thoroughly enjoyed this, and I don't know if you eat cake, but it's all yours. And you must come back.
Paul, it's an honor.
Absolutely a blast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you much. The Associate Commissioner, Garth Glissman from the SEC. Happy birthday. Everybody, the whole crew over here is like, can't wait to go off the air so they can dig in. So beware. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back. What a fantastic conversation that was with Garth, and we have more to come as we continue here. Let's go out to Honolulu and talk to our next caller. Certainly, Coy is the farthest one away. Coy, good afternoon. It's afternoon in Honolulu. How are you? Coy, you there out in Honolulu?
Hello.
Hey.
Hello, yes. Honored. Mahalo for taking my
great
call,
to have
Paul.
You on.
Especially honored to have gotten in here before the likes of Iron Man and Legend on this special
cast
from yours from the SEC tournament. Calling from Honolulu. This is, you know, will you be doing play-by-play or color commentary for this SEC basketball?
I'm just doing our show. I am neither qualified or desired to do anything other than this.
Okay. I also wanted to mention, you know, previous time I called, it's eventful, perhaps fortuitous, that I bring a particular dynamic to you. I come from the future. This transition that Alabama football currently experiences, it parallels Hawaii football a few years ago with the departure of Coach Todd Graham, controversial, and the selection of Hawaii football's 25th coach, oddly enough, a legend himself, a Hawaii football quarterback legend, Timmy Chang. But it's going to be Hawaii's third season this year, and even with the run and shoot, it's still a hallmark Hawaii football, even before another legend, Coach June Jones. Hawaii has essentially had losing records these 2 years since Chang took over. So my tight. As we say in Hawaii, cool head, main thing. All right. Don't run. We have 40 in your own transition period. You're in for a ride. Aloha, Paul. God bless.
Hey, aloha. Thank you very much. I remember Timmy when he played out there. Let's check out Matt up next in San Antonio. Hello, Matt.
Hey, brother. How you doing, man? I was telling my DC where I started in car first. I had to go to the clinic because I've been dealing with a lot of foot pain going in between my legs. He did a urinary test to see if I had any kidney infection that's causing the pain going through my legs. He said he gave me pain pills, if that's guys might want to know, deal with some pain down there and just stress it out. My legs and my foot have been hurting me. Look, I want to say I'm sorry to spoil a little bit. I went off the deep end. It's just, Paul, I deal with a lot of that with some of my family members, and I don't mean to make you guys think I'm crazy. I'm not. It's just, I've been dealing with a lot of
stuff. We would never think that. Absolutely not, Matt.
Well, you're like a brother to me too, Paul. And I wanted to say,
I appreciate it. You're part of our family, and you continue to try to get a little bit better. Thank you so much. Final hour, straight ahead.
Thank you for listening to the Best of the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. Watch the Paul Feinbaum Show weekdays from 3 to 7 Eastern on the SEC Network. Plus, you can listen and watch on the ESPN app.